Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 15, Text 18. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Anye tad anurupani mano jnani mahatmana gayanti sna maharaja sneha klina yashanai. My dear king, other boys would sing enchanting songs appropriate to the occasion, and their hearts would melt out of love for the Lord. Om Jnana Timurandasya Ananjana Salakaya Chakshurin Mulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Vapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Vidati Sapadantikam Adadanas Tinandante Idam Yache Puna Puna Shrima Rupa Padam Bhoja Dulisham Janma Janmani Vairagi Bhakti Rasham Payatnai Apayam Amanabip Samandam Kipambuhiya Paradhuka Duki Sanatanastam Prabhumasrayami Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevicha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Vidadha Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, dear devotees, Happy New Year from Vrindavan. May you all have a very prosperous New Year, especially spiritually. This is from Vrindavan. New Year in Vrindavan, and also it was Sunday that I take darshan of the deities usually about noon, and practically I couldn't get into the temple with all the people coming from pilgrimage wanting to start their New Year auspiciously by seeing the beautiful form of the Supreme Lord. I was reading in this book, Hito Pradesh, and it was talking about how, like the lines on a pot, the impressions of children that are made in the mind of children stay quite fixed in their life. And the commentator told this his story just to show you about why people want to start the new year with a favorable impression in the consciousness. Because it's the impressions in the consciousness that carry us to auspiciousness or inauspiciousness throughout our day or throughout our life. So instead of that, very interesting that there was a pious king from Punjab, Raj Singh, and he was especially devoted to the cows. So one time a cow got stuck into one of the palace gates, and a whole crowd came along, and then one man there suggested, well, why don't, some people say, let's take down the gate or something. Well, one man said, why take down the gate? Just take off the cow's horns. And the crowd became, they were pious Hindus. They became furious with this man, and one of the king's spies was there. So he called the man. He says, you can't be a Hindu. How can you be a Hindu and in any way want to give discomfort to a cow? You think the palace gate is worth more than the sacred cow? All the demigods, 33 million demigods, reside in the body of a cow. He said, no, I'm a Hindu. He said, I don't believe it. Go get your mother. So he gets his mother, and he says, you must not. No, no, I am a Hindu. He said, no, no, you must have had some relation with some non-Hindu. Otherwise, how can you produce a son like that? And then she said, well, I'll tell you, I'll reveal something to you. She said, when I was pregnant, somehow or other, some story, or before conception or something like that, she said, the first thing I saw was a butcher. And he said, and that's why my son. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
What?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So the first thing the first thing I saw is a butcher, she said. And that's why my son is like that. So the point was made of, and therefore, after that time, the king ordered that when a Hindu lady wakes up, the first thing she does is has a mirror and looks at herself just to create the impression of piety in the consciousness. So I was just saying, when I was thinking that story, when I saw all these Hindus and very, very pious, you know, somehow, of course, the culture has been lost, but the fact that they want to look at the Supreme Lord at the first thing they do during the year, and that so many of them came, it kind of impressed me in that way, that this is actually good to evoke auspiciousness. And before I get into the Katha, one technical thing I should mention is for the next month, I'll be traveling to different places in India, and it shouldn't be a problem having the class. Next Sunday, I'll be on a train, so I'm going to finalize that today, and you'll get a message if the class will be next Saturday morning instead of Sunday morning, and I can do things like that. So I thought one nice thing to do is to start the new year by hearing from Srila Prabhupada. So this is what Prabhupada said. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Siddha Pasyanti. This is Rig Veda mantra. Actual aim of life is to satisfy Lord Vishnu, and Krishna is the origin of Vishnu Tattva. And he is pleased through Radharani. Therefore, we don't keep Krishna alone. No. Radha Krishna. First Radharani. So this was actually a Radhastami. So that day is today. First you have to worship Radharani. If you go through Radharani. Therefore, in Vrindavan, you will see all devotees. They will dress one another. Jai Radhe. Still, because they know that if Radharani is pleased, if I can please Radharani, Radharani is presented, the original pleasure potency, always absorbed in thought of Krishna. So anyone who comes before Radharani to serve Krishna, oh, she becomes so pleased. Oh, here is a devotee of Krishna. She immediately recommends, Krishna, oh, here is a devotee. He is better than me. This is Radharani. I may be not devotee. I may be most fallen rascal. But if I try to reach Krishna through Radharani, then my business is successful. Sorry. Therefore, we should worship Radharani first. That is our business. Instead of offering directly one flower to Krishna, you should just put it in the hands of Radharani. My mother, Radharani, Jagan Mata, mother of the world, if you kindly take this flower and offer it to Krishna. Oh, Radharani says, oh, you have brought a flower? Krishna said, Patam Pushpam Palam Toyam. But don't try to offer Krishna directly. Just offer through Radharani. It will be very much appreciated by Radharani. So this is our philosophy. To please Krishna through Radharani. And just today, it was Radhastami, the auspicious day of the appearance. So we should offer Pushpanjali and pray to Radharani that Radharani, kindly be merciful and tell me about your Krishna. To your Krishna, Krishna is yours. Radha Krishna. Krishna is not independent. Krishna is Radharani's property. So you have to approach Krishna through Radharani. Worship Radharani very nicely and be happy. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. One other thing before I begin the class today. Just before, it's 10 o'clock here now, but just before I began the class, maybe about 2 hours before, a former student of mine visited who became actually a very prominent Bhagavad Gita speaker after studying all the commentaries for years on the Bhagavatam. And he's very, very learned, but actually it was very, very nice. We were actually discussing some of the verses and very, very learned. And his grandfather was one of the most famous logicians in North India. Had over 700 students that he trained in Nyaya. So we're discussing one thing about one pastime, and he quoted something which I'd like to keep as the mantra for the class. Very nice image. He said, Bhakti rides on the chariot of Dunya. Dunya means utter humility. So Bhakti rides on the chariot of humility. And if that chariot is headed to Vrindavan, then if we want to carry the deep sentiment of Bhakti, to please Krishna. Actually, Bhakti, Raja Bhakti is a very, very special thing because one so much takes the desire into Krishna's heart that one is actually, his life in a material sense is non-existent. Because material life means what? It means a life based on your personal desires. But Raja Bhakti means that the only desire that you have in your heart is the desires of Krishna, the desires to please Krishna. So this is how Prabhupada was so careful that we should never become self-centered, we should never become proud, we should all be humble servants of the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And everything that Prabhupada spoke and the way he spoke was to help us construct that chariot of humble servant so that we can actually be qualified to actually carry devotion in our hearts and that our devotion would move forward in the proper way and take us into Vrindavan. So we'll discuss this pastime today. So Marge Prickett is being addressed, my dear king. And what's being described is Krishna's activities in Vrindavan. As we know, this story is very special because it's the first time Krishna enters Vrindavan because he reaches the mature age of Poganda, 6, gets the cows. And therefore, the cows can go into the forest. The calves have to stay near home. So he was taking care of the calves, and now he has the cows. And beautiful cows, 108 herds and different colors and so many names. And And he's taking them into the forest of Vrindavan. And then it describes, this chat is very beautiful because it describes the mind of God. I once thought of even writing a book called The Mind of God based on the Bhagavata. And spiritual life means to know the mind of God. Because we're the servants of God constitutionally. And if you want to please someone, you have to know their mind. I was mentioning before how Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that the result of Namseva and Damseva is Kamseva, that you actually become awakened to the desire of Krishna, which comes very, very carefully in the Guru Parampara. And by surrendering to the lotus feet of Prabhupada and trying to understand his heart, what you get is the heart of Krishna, desire of Krishna. So the Bhagavatam is revealing the mind of Krishna. And here in this, we see that he sees the first thing is the heart, the kama. He wants to enjoy. Naturally, the absolute reality, having all potencies, will move for its pleasure or happiness. So we see that he wants to enjoy, and therefore, Ratumana the day, he turns his mind to pleasure, and he looks at the forest of Vrindavan, which creates a wonderful atmosphere. It creates the environment where loving exchanges can move smoothly and without restriction, because that is the pleasure of God, lasavaisaha, to enjoy this wonderful taste of pure love, which is exchanged between him and his devotees. So we saw, we had that image, and I tried to give you that image of what actually is Vrindavan, where all the elements and all the entities, both moving and non-moving, are trying to make Krishna pleased, with the intention to please Krishna, so that when Krishna's senses are stimulated by beautiful sights and sounds of Vrindavan in many wonderful ways, he's tasting the love of those who have offered and constructed those beautiful sights and sounds, etc. So Vrindavan means it's full of love. And Krishna himself reciprocates as he touches and glances and acknowledges the wonderful offering that the forest of Vrindavan. So in this type of wonderful spiritual atmosphere that's free from any tinge of any self-motive or selfishness or material inebriety, Pritta Manaha, his mind becomes satisfied. Of course, we should not think that his mind was never satisfied. It's because the spiritual world is an eternal reality, and although there is time and there may be sequence, that time or sequence is under the service of the Supreme Lord. So even there's a sequence, and it comes to the time that finally the forest of Vrindavan makes Krishna's mind satisfied, it's not as if his mind was ever not satisfied at the same time. So we see he's enjoying tending the cows, because this pastime is more with the cowherd boys. And he's tending the cows. And again, I'm requesting you, when I say Krishna and I say cows, what do you see on the cows? Do you see the bells around their neck? Do you see their decorations? Do you see their colors? And Krishna, he's walking with the cows. What is his reciprocation with the cows? How does Krishna feel when he's going behind the cows? He's going behind the cows because he's so much in love with Vrindavan, which is a manifestation of his internal potency, which is the energy to please him, therefore which is filled with love for him and all his devotees, that Krishna in a very personal way is putting his feet on the sands of Vrindavan to soothe Vrindavan from the stampede of the thousands and thousands of cows and along the bank of the Jamuna. What a beautiful sight. at just when Krishna moved from Gokul to Nandagram, and there's this scene, the cows coming over the hill look like a white ocean or a white tidal wave. So the cows are on the bank of the Jamuna, the crystal clear Jamuna, with the lotus flowers and the bees and the soft breezes, Vayuna Jastam, the breezes that are actually lovingly serving Krishna by bringing him the droplets of water to cool his body and the fragrances of Vrindavan. So I'm hoping as you're listening to this, you can create within your mind Vrindavan. And then look at your heart. How do you feel about this? Does this image of Krishna walking in Vrindavan, does it fill your heart with priti or love? Does it fill your heart with the desire to please Krishna? Does it fill your heart with the desire to be with Krishna so that you can actually render service in some way to Krishna? And does it give you the happiness of that service to Krishna? Because in Vrindavan, everyone is fully filled with this priti. And therefore, everything is moving out of love. When things move out of love, they make a strong impression in the mind. I was reading in the Bhakti Sandarbha today that only if demons are killed by Krishna do they go back to Godhead. If they're killed by Vishnu, they don't go back to Godhead. Why? Because Krishna means the fullest manifestation of God's heart. It means the fullest manifestation of God's beauty. And therefore, when the demons die absorbed in Krishna, and it says, even Sishupal, Pondraka, it names so many demons, when they saw Krishna's gait, his beautiful walking, his smiles. So even though they had that enmity, Krishna produced the avesh or the absorption in him, and it made impressions on their mind. Whatever you see makes impressions on your mind. But when Hiranyaksha was killed, when Hiranyakashipu was killed, they had to take another birth. They had to take another birth as Sishupal. And Sishupal, because he was killed by Krishna, he got liberation. Why? Because Krishna absorbs the mind. Therefore, he made the point that although rag bhakti, or bhakti done out of attachment rather than obligation or duty, can be to any avatar, when we say rag bhakti, or bhakti, which is an absorption of the heart, a full absorption of the heart, out of natural liking, he says we're referring to Krishna primarily, and Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. Why? Because the full absorption comes in Krishna, who is the full reciprocation of the heart of God and the beauty of God, God and his loving relationships, and therefore it's Krishna who's all attractive, who can really invoke the full absorption of the heart in that supreme absolute reality. So Krishna is going through Vrindavan. He's imitating the animals. His voice is like a rumbling cloud, and it's so charming. And there's singing and dancing. And then he takes a rest, and his friends, his coward boys, they make a nice bed out of twigs and flowers. But Krishna, Utpala, he'd rather lie on the lap of his loving friends. So we're seeing these activities of how Krishna is exchanging. And then we get to this very amazing verse. Because it says, my dear kings, other boys would sing enchanting songs appropriate to the occasion, and their hearts would melt out of love for the Lord. So now we can imagine this. And there's a lot in this verse. And actually, with this person that visited me, we discussed this verse. I found out many new things. But it's so nice because what is the kirtan? Just imagine that they're actually singing. And what they're singing is, they're singing suitable songs that are suitable according to the festival or pastime of Krishna. And actually, everything in Vrindavan is a festival. What we read in the Krishna book, what we read in the Bhagavatam, is almost like a code. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur would pray to one word, and so much meaning would come out. Because we hear just one festival, but there's unlimited festivals in Vrindavan. There's even a festival if Krishna's the wind is blowing, and Krishna's golden garment blows to the side. Now that's significant because that is the golden garment of Krishna. And just the garment blowing to one side reveals Krishna's form or creates another type of dress that is so unlimitedly beautiful that there's a festival. A festival. And the cowherd boys and the gopis, they, just by their heart and their love, immediately they're composing beautiful songs to describe it. And then on another day, the peacock feather may blow by the wind. Everything, that's why it says in Vrindavan, every walking is a dance, every talking is a song. It's literal. Everything about Krishna, every movement, every activity is so wonderful. It enhances the quality of Krishna, the sight of Krishna, and then there's a beautiful festival, and there's songs. We are fortunate. We get the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and we get the songs of Narottam Das Thakur. Radha Krishna Pranamora Yugala Kishora. We get these beautiful songs. But those type of songs, the wonderful songs that we are singing, those type of songs are composed every day from the hearts of the Brijbasis. One time with Srimati Radharani, her ankle bell, Krishna asked her, would you please take off your ankle bell? Because if the sound of your ankle bell is heard, then someone may discover us. And then Radharani said that, no, I can't take off my ankle bell, because actually my ankle bell, the little bells on my ankle, are my personal associates who want to be near me to actually glorify me. And what will happen to them if they're separated from my body? So when Lalita heard this, when she heard the karuna or the compassion of Srimati Radharani, then there was a festival. There was a festival on that day about the compassion of Radharani. So you can imagine then the songs that are composed by the Nitya Siddha associates, the eternal associates, you can imagine the songs by the Astaka Sakis and the Manjaris, what songs they can sing, highlighting Radharani's compassion, and how in those songs they can embody, because poetry and song not only describes something, but it recreates a feeling in a different form. So that one can actually, by singing that song or hearing that poetry, actually taste the same type of mood or feeling. So there's a whole festival. And you can imagine when the gopis are singing the songs that are spontaneously composed in their hearts about Srimati Radharani's compassion, how much they are tasting her qualities. How much they're tasting her compassion, and how much the love is coming from their hearts. So here we see the boys would sing enchanting songs appropriate to the occasion, to the festival of watching Krishna and his activities. and how they were singing, but how would they sing Sneha, My Love, Neenha, Melted, Dia, their heart, Shanai, slowly they would sing. Slowly they would sing with the bhava of their hearts, with their melted hearts, and the appropriate songs. I remember every year we used to go to the festival of Srila Prabhupada's sannyas ceremony. And there was one brahmachari there called Seshayi Brahmachari. And he was a simple brahmachari. In 1977, Prabhupada asked, is Seshayi still brahmachari? Now it's 30 years later, and Seshayi is still brahmachari. And he sings in such a beautiful way, and especially he sings this song. I can't sing it like him, but he sings this song, and I was sitting next to Bibi Govinda Swami, and he started to sing this song. It's a Shri Rupa Manjari Pada Se Mora Sampada Se Mora Bhajana Pujana Se Mora Bhajana Pujana Se Mora Pranadana Se Mora Bharana. So he was singing this song, and Govinda Swami turned to me and he said, Seshayi Vishnu is the ultimate blues singer. Coming from the heart, so we can imagine if we have, generally what happens is, to explain the spiritual world, it has to be explained according to our experience. So we can imagine the singer that we feel embodies most the emotion in their heart, and that emotion comes out in the most appropriate way. And we should understand that whatever talent and emotion they have, it's an insignificant fraction of the singing of the cowherd boys and the gopis in Vrindavan. I remember one time I took a group to Barsana, some of the young men from Boston, 19, 20 years old, people living outside. And we came, and when we got into the temple, the main temple, we were singing, Radharani Ki Jai, Maharani Ki Jai, Bolo Barsan. And then this old man, he was in his 70s, very thick glasses, just took over the song. And what he would do is he would chant, and he stopped us with it. He was very powerful. And he took over, and he started singing these padas in some of the Vaishnav lines, like Nimbakacharya. Their sadhana is that they go to music sessions where they learn classical songs about Radharani composed by their acharyas. Just like I sing one by one of their acharyas called Haridev Vyasacharya, something like that. Shama Gauri Nitya Kishori Prita Majori Sri Radhe Rasika Rasilo Chaila Chabilo Gunagara Vilo Sri Krishna. So this song, we only have about 12 lines. It's actually 1,000, I believe. Or he wrote 1,000 songs, something like this. So they learn these padas, these verses about Radharani's pastime. So he started chanting these verses about Radharani's pastimes, and then the refrain was this song. And one young man, because he had to do it as frame of reference, he saw this old man with these thick glasses singing like with such emotion. He looked and he turned to another one, a person, and he said with sincerity, he said, he's the Stevie Wonder of Barsana. So We can have some, but imagine in this pastime. And then imagine Krishna, how much appreciation when he's hearing this type of song and this type of dance and the festival that goes on. Now we'll do the next verse, which is a very wonderful verse in transition. I'm just going to, if you just wait 1 second, I should take some water because my throat is a little clogged up. Excuse me. It seems like I'm losing my voice a little bit. I think I'll make it through. Wait, I'm going to take something else for that. Well, evam nagudatma gati samaya kopatma jatvam charitai vidyam vayam remi rama lalita parapalavo kramyai samam gramya varisha chastita. In this way, the Supreme Lord, in describing all these wonderful Madhurya pastimes, where the Supreme Lord is just equal with all his friends, no Aishwarya, manifested, no opulence. In this way, the Supreme Lord, whose soft lotus feet are personally attended to by the Goddess of Fortune, concealed his transcendental opulences by his internal potency and acted like the son of a cowherd. Yet even while enjoying like a village boy in the company of other village residents, he often exhibited feats only God could perform. So this is very, very significant. Excuse me. The Supreme Lord, his position, his soft lotus feet are personally attended by the Goddess of Fortune. In other words, he's served by the source of all opulence. He concealed, this person concealed his transcendental opulences by his internal potency, Somaya, and acted like the son of a cowherd. Yet even while enjoying, like a village boy, Gramyavat, Gramya Samam, he was like a village personality, together with village persons, he often exhibited feats only God could perform. So we know the nature of Krishna is that to fully reveal himself, he has to check his divinity. Because the nature of divinity or opulence or high position is that you naturally have to check parts of your intimate personality that are inappropriate for your position. And therefore, when someone leaves his position, the corporation, the office, and comes home, he can, bereft of that position, he can uncheck the sweetness of his personality. He can be himself at home and reveal the loving aspects of his personality that require equality. Most aspects of our personality require equality to be revealed. And therefore, when God is in a position of superiority, most of his personality cannot be manifest. And that's why Krishna is the full manifestation of God's personality, because he's God without Aishwarya, without position, and therefore unreserved in revealing himself. and therefore the position bereft of divinity is actually a more exalted and fuller manifestation of the personality of Godhead. But it doesn't mean that he doesn't have that Aishwarya. It's not that Krishna is bereft of Aishwarya. Just like when the high court judge comes home, it doesn't mean he doesn't have his power and his intelligence and his law knowledge and his... It's just not manifest. So that a higher sense of intimacy can be revealed. So God has that power, it's just not manifest in terms of the appropriateness of certain loving relationships, which he enjoys more than simply the relationship of reverence and service, so, the mood of servitude and reverence. So the point here is, Isha Chastita, that although he's like a village boy, he often exhibited feats only God can be performed. And therefore, in Vrindavan, there's also Aishwarya or opulence. Actually, Madhvacharya said a very, very interesting thing. He said, Madhurya or sweetness must always be there in the vessel of Aishwarya or opulence. Because unless, for the practitioner of Krishna consciousness, unless he sees the opulence or greatness of God, he will not develop dinata or humility, which is the basis of the service attitude. And the service attitude is the basis of all relationships with Krishna. And in Vrindavan even, Krishna, who has that potency, he has that Isha Chastita, he has the power, and he can do things that are unique to the Supreme Lord of all power, he sometimes also manifests them. But when he manifests them in Vrindavan, it only increases the sweet love of the residents of Vrindavan. When Krishna kills a great demon, then his friends, they feel more friendship with him. When Krishna does some heroic deed, the gopis, they feel more intimate love with him. So the difference actually between Vrindavan and outside of Vrindavan is that in Vrindavan, when Aishwarya manifests, it never covers the Madhurya, rather it makes it more sweet. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes Aishwarya in Vrindavan. It's a very interesting analogy. He said, in India, when you boil milk, a big pot of, huge, huge pot of milk for hundreds of people, making sweet, and you don't want it to boil over, they put some straw in the milk. So therefore, the milk can somehow go at a high boil, but it won't boil over. So at the same sense, he's described, and therefore, you don't always see the straw in the milk, but the straw sometimes comes up just, it comes up occasionally. The straw comes up occasionally. And same thing with the Aishwarya or the opulence in Vrindavan. It comes up occasionally, and it serves a purpose. It simultaneously keeps the Madhurya, the sweetness, in check so that the relationships, the pastimes, can continue perhaps to proceed progressively without being overwhelmed by the emotion. But at the same time, it increases the love in a very sweet way because they're appreciating the wonder of his the glories. They're appreciating the glories of their friend. So in this way, so then what's going to happen now is the pastime changes, and we're going to see the manifestation of Krishna's opulence in relationship with the demon. So we'll read a few verses like that, and then I'll stop today. Shri Dhamma Nama Gopalo Rama Keshavayosaka Subala Stoka Krishnadya Gopa Premedam Abravim. Once, some of the cowherd boys, Sridham, the very close friend of Rama and Krishna, along with Subal, Stoka Krishna, and others, lovingly spoke the following words. So they're going to actually make a request to Krishna, but the request is Premna. Gopa Premna, they spoke. They spoke the request with love, which means that the request that they're making of Krishna, even if they're asking for something for themselves, their inner motive is love. Their inner motive is how what I can ask or what I'm asking for Krishna is only a way to actually increase his pleasure. And some of the cowherd boys, Sridham is Radharani's brother, and Subal, he is Priyanarmasaka, very intimate friend. Stoka, they spoke the following words. Rama, Rama, Mahabaho, Krishna Dushta, Vahana, Ito Vidure Sumahan, Vanamta Lali Sankulam. The cowherd boy said, O Rama, Rama, mighty armed one, O Krishna, destroyer of the miscreants, not far from here is a very great forest filled with rows of palm trees. So Rama, Rama, they're saying, because they respect. This is Krishna's older brother. And Rama, Rama, it is also for the purpose of enthusing Lord Balaram to engage in this pastime. And not far from here, there's a forest that's filled with rows of tall trees, which is a very lush fruit. It's almost like a longer version of a mango, and it's very, very wonderful and tasty. So that's one of the forests, Talavan. There are 12 forests of Vrindavan. Braj, Golok, Gokul, it's all the name for the same thing. It's Brajamandala. But in Brajamandala, there are different main forests where different pastimes happen. Of course, the chief forest is Vrindavan. And Vrindavan extends all the way from Panchkrosh Vrindavan, the area where the Krishna Balaram Mandir is, where the cowherd boy trail circumambulates the Rasa Stali, and most of the temples are built, out to Govardhan is still the Vrindavan forest. And then from Govardhan, you can take a 20-minute car ride on a very, very bumpy road, and you'll come to Varsana, and that's still the forest of Vrindavan. And then from Varsana, you could ride another 10 minutes, and you'll be in Nandagaon, and that's still the forest of Vrindavan. So all these places, that's just the forest of Vrindavan, but this is another forest of Brajamandala Vrindavan. And in that forest, there are tall trees. And in those tall trees, there were very lush fruits. And they were falling from the ground, and many were already lying on the ground. And this indicates that it was the month of Shravan, where these fruits are very, very ripe. That's why they're naturally lying on the ground. And they're so sweet and so delicious. But those forests are being guided by Denukena, Duratmana, one who has the evil mind. And what is the evil mind? Abarudhani. He kept the fruits, the evil one, kept the fruits under his control. The whole sense of material sense gratification is the sense that I am the controller and I am the enjoyer, the subtle sense. And therefore, one who is evil-minded, this sense of I am the controller and I am the enjoyer, expands to such a degree that one sees the whole world as theirs. Therefore, Prabhupada said that Maya, not this. Maya means everything is Krishna's energy. But the illusion is of Maya is not this. You're not seeing it as Krishna's energy. You're seeing it as your energy for two purposes. One, to enjoy you need to control. And to enjoy you need to feel that you're the controller. So here we see the demon Dainakasura. Their fruits are so ripe, they're just lying on the ground. But he kept them fully guarded that no one should take these fruits, that he's the controller and he's the enjoyer. And these fruits, if anything, they would go and being served to Kamsa. So, O Rama, O Krishna, Dainika is the most powerful demon and has assumed the form of an ass. He is surrounded by many friends who assumed a similar shape and who are just as powerful as he. So this is the Cowherd Boys, and the mood of friendship is to inspire chivalry. So they're explaining to the Cowherd Boys are explaining to Ram and Krishna, and they want to see their Vira Rasa. This is indirect Rasa. Indirect Rasa means with Krishna, there's five primary spirits of love with Krishna. And these spirits of love with Krishna, which is Shantaras, Dasyaras, Sakyaras, Atsalyaras, and Madhuryaras, the five spirits of love, the five tastes of enjoyment. Krishna, Prabhupada said that Krishna is the enjoyer. And what does that mean? He said, just like you have milk and you have sugar, how much pleasure there is in just milk and sugar. But if you're creative and you know the science of mixing them together and making the milk into yogurt and the sugar, he said you can make sandesh, you can make rubbery, you can make burfi, you can make shrikhand. And he said, therefore, variety is the spice of life. So in the spiritual world, the pleasure is this potency of priti or love, how Krishna can be pleased, but there's different flavors or tastes of that love. So Krishna is enjoying all, that's why he's Krishna with the gopis at night, then he comes back to Nandagram in the morning, and he's with his parents, and during the day with his friends. They're all different flavors of the same substance that's transformed into varieties of affection. And those five varieties of affection can be experienced indirectly through powerful emotional experiences that are so powerful that they seem to become relationships within themselves. For example, if two friends are joking, then actually what they're doing is exchanging their friendship indirectly through humor. It's not a separate relationship. It's the relationship of friendship enjoyed with joking. But joking is such a powerful emotion that it almost assumes a separate rasa or relationship, but actually it's indirectly enjoying friendship. And Jiva Goswami gives the example. He said, if in the distance there's a musical performance on the stage, then you can say that the music is coming from the stage. But the music is not coming from the stage. The music is coming from the people on the stage. But because they're so closely associated, it looks like the music is coming from the stage. So actually, the love is it's not just the humor, but it's the friendship that's coming through the humor. And one of the indirect rasas is called vira ras, or chivalry. And one enjoys the mood, especially of friendship, through the chivalry. So the Cowherd Boys, after singing so many appropriate songs and Krishna enjoying that, the ras is churning, because that's what Vrindavan is. And these particular leelas and pastimes are simply to create additional emotional components that incite the exchange of love between Krishna and his devotees, either by heightening Krishna's glory with some pastime, which enthuses the love of his devotees, or to create the proper atmosphere and leelas and pastimes where Krishna can directly exchange love with his devotees. So this is such a wonderful opportunity for Krishna to drink the friendship of the devotees and the devotees to drink the friendship of Krishna. So it's a challenge, and this is what friends do. Oh, Krishna, there's a forest. Oh, Ram, there's a forest. And there's a challenge for you, oh, my dear friend. There's a powerful demon in the form of an ass, and he's surrounded by many friends who've assumed a similar shape, and they're just as powerful as he. A matter of fact, Krishna, this Devaka ass, he's so powerful, he has eaten men alive. And therefore, creating more of the chivalry, all the people and animals are even terrified of going into this most beautiful and exquisite forest which they play. Oh, Krishna, oh, Krishna, oh, killer of the enemy, Amitra, Amitra, Han, oh, killer of the enemies, even the birds are afraid to fly there. So Krishna, in the spirit of his friendship, he's going to go into the forest. So I try to share something today. Okay, we can end for today on New Year's Eve, and we can hopefully carry that nice statement that bhakti moves only on the chariot of Danya, which means utter humility, which means the full bloom and manifestation of love comes in the heart of one who is willing to give and sacrifice himself fully. We tend to exist by our desires. And if one is fully in love, then he exists by another's desires. And in that sense, love is the greatest statement of humility, and humility is the absolute prerequisite for absolute love. So if we actually want to enter into the highest love and the highest pleasure, we have to ride the chariot of humility by becoming dasa, dasa, anudasa. We have to become the servant of the servant of the servant of the Vaishnavas. And this was Prabhupada's pranali. It was Prabhupada's path to engage us very, very humbly in, as he said, the mission of compassion. They asked Prabhupada, how can we become compassionate? And Prabhupada said, you serve the mission of compassion. So I'll end now. It's a little bit late here, but it seems to have worked so far to just speak to, not, I guess, an attendance, but, you know, three or four people, because then people get a sense who's there. I also get a sense who's there, and it helps me to overcome the obstacle that I'm speaking to mute phones, but I'm actually envisioning the people, because either I hear from them on here, or someone writes me, or et cetera. So, but anyone on New Year's Eve, like the New Year's Day, just like to say Hare Krishna. And then, anybody there today?
No, nobody's here.
No one is there today.
Happy New Year's.
Who said that?
Damodar.
Okay, Damodar. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Damodar. All right, I want to say something about that. I remember there was one guy that was a non-devotee, but he was working in a devotee office, all devotees. So he tried to be a devotee, and he was a guy from Brooklyn. And then when he heard a big sannyasi was coming in, and the sannyasi came in, he heard he was very learned. And he looked at the sannyasi, and he said, Maharaj, Maharaj, he said, I heard you're a really, really wise guy.
So, Damodar? Okay.